Okay, guys, just a quick note before this gets started. This is actually a double episode. It's two separate podcasts. Cody and I recorded a regular episode of Locked on Bulls this evening, kind of reacting to the trade of Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott to the Thunder for Joffrey Laverne, Cameron Payne, Anthony Morrow, and just kind of what it means for the Bulls and some of the other stuff, like Garin Pack's comments at their press conference today and the fact that they didn't trade Jimmy Butler, some of that kind of stuff. That runs about 40 minutes. And then I have another conversation I recorded with Fred Katz, who's the Thunder beat writer for the Norman Transcript and the host of Locked on Thunder. You know, we get a little bit more into, you know, what the players are in the trade that happened from either side. So, you know, if you want a little bit of insight into, you know, Cameron Payne and Joffrey Laverne and Anthony Morrow, Fred has some good insight into that and, you know, maybe how Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson are going to fit in with the Thunder, so that kind of stuff. So if you want that, go maybe 42, 43 minutes in. But until then, here's just the episode of Locked on Bulls that me and Cody did. Welcome to a post-trade deadline episode of Locked on Bulls, part of the Locked on Podcast Network. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review. Tell your friends to subscribe. All that kind of stuff. You can find us on Twitter at Locked on Bulls. Like us on Facebook at Locked on Bulls. And if your company is interested in advertising to men between the ages of 18 and 54, then your company should be advertising to us right here on our show. Our audience is 95% male, and 78% of our audience is between the ages of 18 and 44. Recent surveys have shown that podcast listeners are 65% more willing to consider purchasing products they've learned about from podcasts, and 60%, given equal price and quality, prefer to purchase from companies that advertise in their favorite podcasts. Our rates are reasonable, so make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with any inquiries. So, Cody, Jimmy Butler is still on the Bulls. Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott are not.
That is correct. About a half hour, 15 minutes before the 2 p.m. trade deadline on Thursday, the Bulls sent Taj Gibson, 7.5 years in Chicago, the Bulls, the only organization he ever played for, sent Taj, Doug McDermott, and
a 2018 second round pick.
Correct.
Which with no protections on it, I confirmed.
I had to remember that there too. The fact that they included that is outrageous. But they got in return from the Oklahoma City Thunder, Joffrey Laverne, a young center, Cam Payne, a young point guard, and Anthony Morrow, a veteran wing. Sean, I was at first glance simply not stunned by the trade, but I would say Thunder winners, Bulls losers. From my perspective, the Thunder got the best player in the deal in Taj Gibson. They got the second best player in the deal in Doug McDermott. The Bulls got the next three best players and still sent a 2018 second round pick to the Thunder for those three guys. I get some of the Bulls' perspective. Their vibe is opening up playing time for youngsters, but what was your initial reaction to this trade?
I'm kind of on the same page with you. The way they explained it, like, you kind of understand it. They were really high on Cameron Payne in the draft, which tends to be, you know, the way that they explain stuff. Remember when they traded for Jaren Grant in the Rose trade, they said they were really high on him in the draft. So that's kind of been their MO, is, you know, when you can trade for a guy that you were high on the draft. And the other thing is, like you said, yeah, they, you know, they want to open up minutes for Portis and Valentine, and that's why you trade Taj and McDermott, which, I mean, I guess I get it, but okay, the second round pick part, like, I agree with you. Like, the Thunder probably do this deal without the second round pick. You don't need to give them a second round pick.
Yeah, before you just say second round picks don't matter, which I generally would agree with you, yes. The Bulls also cited second round pick Paul Zipser as being a significant reason for being okay with making the trade to also give him some of Doug's minutes. So there's a second round storyline, and it should be noted the Mavericks basically traded 2 second round picks and a young wing in Justin Anderson to get Nerlens Noel, a promising young center. So the accumulation of second round picks as an asset can be very helpful, certainly. So the fact that that was in there, mind-boggling. I don't know why we should believe that Cameron Payne is a good basketball player in any regard whatsoever, and he also comes with medical questions. He's a 22-year-old point guard, 14th overall taken, I believe, in the 2015 draft. Obviously, he hasn't had a lot of playing time in Oklahoma City behind Russ Westbrook because he's a superstar, but he had a Jones fracture in his foot.
Which is the same thing that Kevin Durant had a few years ago.
And then he had a follow-up surgery on the same foot this September, which the Thunder claim was unrelated completely, but nonetheless very concerning that the same foot has had two surgeries, including something as serious as that Jones fracture type thing. So that's on the table, but just even his basketball ability. He's shooting 33% from the field this year. He's a 30% three-point shooter, I think, Sean. The Bulls now have 5 point guards on their roster. Seriously, five, right?
We're counting Isaiah Cannon.
Count Isaiah Cannon, count Jaren Grant, count Michael Carter-Williams, Rajon Rondo, and newly acquired Campaign. Four of them, we're excluding Jaren Grant here, four of them are awful shooters. We're talking sub 32% from three or far worse. So I don't get how Campaign fits in with Jimmy Butler, who we need to get to as well, because they hung on to Jimmy on a day in which he was the center of attention regarding trade speculation with the Celtics. But initial reaction, I understand the shakeup. I understand and I agree with the need to get young guys playing time the next 25 games to see what you have in Bobby Portis, Denzel Valentine. I don't understand. I feel like they overpaid there a little, and I don't think that Campaign and Joffrey LaVerne are that good. They've been bad at basketball, and now they're on the Bulls, and obviously they have a little more hope, but what do you read into all that? What's your favorite subplot of this? Is Campaign a guy they should have hope for, Sean?
By the way, just as a side note, the other piece that they got back in the trade is Anthony Morrow, who is noted to be a shooter. He's been one of the best shooters in the league in previous years. You know what he's shooting from three-point range right now?
29%.
So that's not great.
Yeah.
And Anthony he's also a guy like he's kind of similar to Doug in that he's not as big as Doug obviously from a physical standpoint, but he's similar to Doug in that he literally can't do anything besides shoot.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're getting a wing who can shoot who can also do other stuff. He can't defend anyone. He's not a playmaker.
We need to point out the future aspects of this trade regarding contract control. Anthony Morrow is set to be a free agent. I would just expect the Bulls to let him walk unless he's coming back on a minimum deal for some reason because he loves downtown Chicago and just doesn't want to play for much more or something. Right. Don't expect him to be part of the future. Joffrey LaVerne will be entering restricted free agency, so the Bulls can have matching rights if they extend him a qualifying offer. I don't expect them to pursue him in restricted free agency, though Gar Foreman praised the idea of that they can control him this summer was a big part of the trade. He didn't say a big part exactly, but he insinuated that a little bit, Sean. Do you expect him to be pursued by the Bulls in restricted free agency this year?
If he plays well, I mean, he's shooting 34% from three this year, so if they can, you know, make him into sort of a stretch four type, he hasn't really shown that on a consistent basis over his career, but, you know, if that's kind of what they see him doing, if he can actually fill that role, then maybe they bring him back. I can't imagine he's going to be the guy that's getting a ton of offers on the open market, so, you know, if they like what they see in the next 2 months and they can bring him back for not that much money, then yeah, sure, that might be something.
Yeah, he'll be behind Robin Lopez and Chris Felicio, obviously, on the depth chart at the center position. When you go by that, Campaign should be noted that he's under contract control for years, a couple more years of his rookie deal, and then they'll have extension rights on him. So they have plenty of time to figure out what he can bring to the team and how he can fit in. But essentially, I think this deal boils down to Campaign versus Doug McDermott moving forward. Who's going to get the better end of it plus that second round pick, whatever that turns in for the Thunder maybe. But it's kind of, in many ways, is it not just a Doug for Campaign flyer maybe?
I guess, and they've sort of given up. It was pretty clear, like they've given up on Doug, which is not a great look because they gave up so much to get him in terms of moving up in the draft. We'll get to that, but it's not great.
Yeah, it really, really isn't. If you want to see this new look Bulls team play, and by new look, I mean a couple new players here, you can get tickets at SeatGeek because SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the basketball games you want to see up close and in person. all the other sports you want to see as well. Baseball, of course, getting kicked off here with spring training. Regular season will start in April, but there's nothing like being in the stadium or arena for the biggest plays of the year. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. You can be anywhere, anytime with a few taps. Instantly find seats for this weekend or any game of the season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find the lowest available price just for you. SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck as well. That's why every ticket is given a grade value score, so you can immediately see underpriced seats and find the best deals to fit your budget. And every ticket with SeatGeek is 100% back guaranteed. You can shop with confidence at SeatGeek. This is what we want our Locked On Bulls listeners to do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code. Use LO Bulls, just how it sounds, LO Bulls as your promo code, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LO Bulls today. The Jimmy Butler subplot of today, Sean. Very, very important. Probably even more important than the trade. I know we started with that. But the Bulls once again offered an opportunity to commit to Jimmy Butler as their franchise centerpiece moving forward after they did not strike a deal with the Boston Celtics, which by most accounts never came close, according to national reports and local reports.
There's different reports out there based on in terms of what was or wasn't offered. Woj says that the Brooklyn picks were on the table. Our buddy Nick Friedel from ESPN says that they weren't. And then Casey Johnson of the Tribune says that they may have been offered, but with protections, which, side note, I think if that was what was on the table, I think it's absolutely correct for the Bulls to not want any protection of the pick, because the whole point of getting that Nets pick, the Nets have the worst record in the league. They have a 25% chance of getting the number one pick. And if you're trading away a guy like Jimmy Butler, the whole point of getting that pick is there's a pretty good chance it's going to be the number one pick so you can get your next franchise player.
Certainly. So the Bulls declined. They did not endorse Jimmy Butler as a franchise player. And when I say they, John Paxson and Gar Forman both spoke to the media in the evening, and neither one did that. Pax basically...
I literally asked yeah, him. I asked him straight up, are you guys planning to build around Jimmy long term?
And Pax said, quote, right now, today, Jimmy is on our roster. End quote. I just want to interject here. One of the most amazing befuddling starts to a response about whether your best player, three-time All-Star, max contract guy who you love, what he means to you, and whether you might build around him.
The next
Well, he's on a roster right now.
The next sentence is good, too.
So, continuing Pax, quote, and Jimmy is under contract for 2 more years. He is a terrific player. This league is fluid, and things can change quickly. End quote. He goes on to say, we have great respect, high value. Teams have to know they have to offer a lot if you want Jimmy. He says, quote, this is a team game you build with players. We are building with Jimmy right now. End quote. I say with emphasis, because the Bulls are building with Jimmy Butler, not around him.
Which is ridiculous, because, I mean, when you have a guy like Jimmy Butler, you know, you have, and, you know, Pax referred to him as a top 10 or 12 player in the league, which I think is an accurate way to place him in terms of, like, the league's hierarchy of stars. When you have a guy like that, and he's under contract, if you're going to keep him, if you say he's your long-term guy, you need to make your other decisions on the roster of, like, who else you want to go after, you know, if you want to keep this guy, let this guy go, based on how they fit with that guy. And I mean, his point about them doing that with Derrick Rose and then Derrick Rose blowing out his knee is well taken, but, you know, you have to maximize your best player's strengths. This is the general rule.
Rajon Rondo signing didn't help that.
No.
And I don't think today's moves are beneficial for Jimmy Butler in any way whatsoever. Say what you want, but Doug McDermott was the best three-point shooter the Bulls had. He was not shooting as well this year as he hoped, but he shot, I think, about 42-43% on threes a year ago. Certainly a sharpshooter. His defensive deficiencies were a point that other teams were exploiting time and again. But the point remains, Doug McDermott was helpful in spacing the floor for Jimmy Butler. I do not see obviously Anthony Moore, we don't expect him to be a part of the future, so looking forward, don't see that helping at all. Campaign, his inability to spot up and shoot three-pointers suggests that he'll need the ball in his hands. And that can be good when he's pushing the pace if he can help a Freda Hoiberg offense get up and down the court more. But I don't see how in the half court he's going to fit alongside Jimmy Butler that well, because Payne is most regarded for his ability to kind of slash and be a good point guard, get others involved a little bit. Again, he's not a stand on the wing and do nothing guy and then lock him down on the other end on defense. That's not who he is, who he seems to be. So I don't see how these moves were made with Jimmy Butler in mind. I literally asked Gar that, and he said, well, you know, obviously when he's your best player, you always make decisions based on who's on your roster and who your better players are. But Gar lent nothing to the sense that the Bulls are ready to make their basketball decisions based around Jimmy Butler. All indications are he's going back to the trade market in June.
Well, yeah, because as an organization, like, I mean, yes, I get that, no, like, basically just like LeBron and two other guys in the league are completely untouchable, but I mean, if you're an organization that wants to, you know, instill loyalty and trust in your best player, you want to come out and say, like, I mean, because, you know, even, you know, Indiana has come out, and even though, you know, there have been reports they're shopping Paul George, they've come out and said, like, you know, we want to build around Paul George, like, we want to win with him here, we want him here long term. The Thunder have obviously said the same thing about Russell Westbrook after Kevin Durant left. Like, they come out and say, you know, we're going to, you know, this is Russ's team now, we're going to build around him. Just all these different examples of, like, there's a superstar out there, and you say, look, we want to build around this guy. Like, the organization will come out and say that. The fact that the Bulls, the reason, like, again, I asked him explicitly, are you going to build around Jimmy? Because I wanted to give him the opportunity to say, yes, Jimmy Butler is our franchise player, and he is going to be the centerpiece going forward. Like, they've had, dating back to the draft last year when they almost traded him, and then Media Day and a few other times, they've had multiple opportunities to say, yes, Jimmy Butler is our guy going forward, and they have not done it.
And I don't think it's the words necessarily that mean the most. I think they'd be helpful. I mean, it's a league of liars in
sure,
many ways.
Sure.
You get lied to about things all the time. I think Bulls fans are well aware of that. Like, you could go out and publicly say you're building around Jimmy Butler and then still flip him later, you know what I mean? And just say you got an outrageous price and circumstances changed.
And you want to hedge a little bit so that you say, like, so that you don't come out and say, no, there's absolutely zero chance he's getting traded, and then, you know, you get a good offer and then you trade him, because otherwise you end up like the Kings, who go on record and say DeMarcus Cousins isn't going anywhere, and then you could take a completely lowball offer for him.
Yeah. But I still think, again, the words might not matter so much, but the actions don't suggest that they're building around Jimmy Butler yet either. So I do think that's concerning. One of the quotes I did think that carried some weight was John Paxson explaining what they would want back for Jimmy Butler, basically. And he said, quote, if you're ever in a position where you're going to rebuild completely, you have to have certainty in terms of what you're getting back, especially if you're going that rebuilding route. You want draft picks, you want high draft picks, and there has to be a certainty to those draft picks. End quote.
So here's my take on this. I think that pushing back the Jimmy Butler talks with the Celtics is the best idea for both sides in that trade. I think it's the best move for the Bulls because you want to wait and see what happens in the lottery. You want to know for sure, is that Nets pick going to be the 1, 2, 3, or 4 pick in the draft? Because then you know more, like, what you have. Because if it's the number one pick in the draft, then you need a little bit less back in terms of other assets because you're getting the number one pick draft in the draft. If it's the fourth pick in the draft, then maybe you need them to give you more stuff. But if having that certainty, like, is going to make it a lot easier to do the deal instead of, like you know, we've talked about this before. Let's say they do that deal and then it turns out that pick that they're counting on being the number one pick ends up being the number four pick, and it's not as valuable. So I think it's probably good for the Bulls to wait until after the lottery when they know what the pick is going to be. And then for the Celtics, I mean, the reason I think if they really were so desperate to land a star that, you know, they would have done anything to do it, they would have put those picks on the table and their other stuff to try, you know, to get Paul George or Jimmy Butler. And so now, like, they're going to have a trial run of going into the playoffs, can this exact group that we have right now, that's pretty good, this is the second best team in the East right now, but, you know, it's pretty good, can this team actually compete with the Cavs? If they go to the conference finals and have a competitive series with the Cavs, then maybe they can say, okay, maybe we don't need to trade for Jimmy Butler, and we can, you know, have, you know, hold on to these picks and get Markelle Fultz or whoever is in 2018. But if they get eliminated in the first or second round, then, you know, maybe they have a little bit more urgency to say, okay, this group is not competing for a championship unless we get a guy like Paul George or Jimmy Butler.
Pax called it a false narrative that the Bulls' primary decision makers, which is himself, Gar Foreman, Michael Reinsdorf, Jerry Reinsdorf, he called it a false narrative that they're not on the same page regarding these Jimmy Butler talks that you just referenced and the ability to engage with the Celtics in trade talks and decide what is the right time and the right return to go with to push the button on a full rebuild if you trade Jimmy Butler. Called a false narrative that they're not on the same page, insisted that there's debate but not division, and those are two separate things, and that it's kind of gotten misconstrued, gotten out of hand in the public sphere when it's talked about. Do you believe the Bulls are on the same page among those four decision makers? Because they can say everything they want to in front of the cameras, but I still just don't know that I'm going to believe it until I see them actually do a rebuild. Actually, until someone writes a book or memoir or something someday, maybe. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think we're ever actually going to know the tenor of those discussions that they had. But again, Gar's passwords said, we don't want to completely tank and rebuild because it can get 5-6 years to get out of there. Pax has said previously in public comments, it's really hard to hit home runs from the middle of the draft. A lot easier to do it when you basically tank and get a high draft pick. So past words suggest there was a clear division. What do you think now?
I mean, like you said, we can't know because we're not in the room, but nothing about this organization or the way that they've acted for the past however many years is giving me any reason to give them the benefit of the doubt that they're, you know, that they are a stable work environment and are on the same page about stuff. That's my thought.
I think they're on the same page completely and not trading Jimmy Butler today. I don't think there was... I think there's an organizational consensus that the Celtics weren't even close enough.
They weren't going to trade him just to trade him because Mark Stein reported today that Atlanta, which I don't know how they would have like that kind of pick set to do that, but Atlanta made an offer of a bunch of draft picks apparently for Jimmy Butler. So if they were going to actually... If they were really motivated to trade him, they wouldn't have. And I've heard, too, the same thing that other people have reported, that they had been telling teams all week that, no, Jimmy Butler is not available. I think, like, if they were motivated to trade him right now, they would have, like, tried to solicit other offers besides the one from Boston with the Brooklyn picks and see what else was out there. I feel like maybe they'll open the market up in June again, after the draft lottery, before the draft. We'll see what happens, but... I think not trading Jimmy now, it's totally defensible. My issue with what they did today is more just that the trade that they made makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, the one area I guess everyone's on the same page with in Bulls ownership, upper management, is the inability to explain what the plan is. Because how many times did Gar and Pax reference that there is a plan and we followed up and then they gave no details about the plan? And I think the reason they gave no details about the plan is because there's still two very clear paths, or it's a fork in the road here, where it's either trade Jimmy the full rebuild or build around Jimmy, and we still have no idea what that is yet because today didn't present itself and we have a really high price for Jimmy Butler. So I understand not saying it, but they acted really clueless as well past the plan of, to me... You try to sum up the Bulls' plan in 10 or 12 words or like one or two sentences, and it's nearly impossible still. I can say with confidence that the plan in the short term is that the Bulls felt the progress of their young players needed to be assessed, and the only way to assess that is with lots of playing time, so they got rid of two guys in the regular rotation getting a lot of minutes. Long term, no idea what the plan is.
So here's the part that's really confusing about the trade and just kind of about, you know, their short-term plans. It's like...
Which part?
Okay, so you trade Taj. They got worse in the short term.
Yeah.
I still think they have a chance at making the playoffs because, like, the rest of the middle to bottom tier of the Eastern Conference is not great. So, like, I don't think it's completely out of the question they make the playoffs still, and because Jimmy Butler is so good, like, I think they still are going to have a chance in there. But they get worse in the short term. But they're not going to get so much worse that their pick, because if they don't make the playoffs, they're going to be like the 9th or 10th seed in the East. And that means that their pick is going to be 13, around where 14. It was last year, 12, 13, 14. And that means they're going to draft the next, you know, Denzel Valentine or Doug McDermott or Bobby Portis or whoever. Like, they're going to just get another guy in the middle of the lottery who's not going to really move the needle and be a game changer for them. So they're not going to compete in the short term as much as they were before they traded Taj Gibson. And they're not going to be bad enough after trading Taj Gibson that they're going to get a high enough draft pick to really, you know, change the calculus of what their roster is or what their rebuild could look like. So this is like such a middle trade.
Yeah, I think they're going to get worse in the long term too, just because, again, I think we have a lot of evidence that Doug McDermott has a role on an NBA team.
I think he's going to do great in Oklahoma City,
yeah,
actually.
I mentioned that too. Like, I think he's really going to flourish because he's going to have more open shots playing with Russell Westbrook. I think it will help Doug too, and this was not his doing. But as soon as the Bulls traded, let's revisit this trade a little bit. As soon as they traded two first-round picks for him and touted him, like, he was in the spotlight. And then he had that knee injury that kept him out a long time in his rookie season, never fully gained the trust of Tom Thibodeau, who was trying to win a championship and save his job, or win a championship and walk out guns a-blazing in glory with a championship.
Sure.
He optioned from the Bulls because maybe that was just already over anyway, probably, but fewer expectations for Doug, less of a limelight, I think, could probably help, because look, it's a good basketball town. Like, the fans are good, they're smart, it's obvious teams that are just attacking Doug off the dribble and exploiting him, so I think he put a lot of pressure on himself too. If he can just find more of a niche role and be a role player on a team fighting in the playoff picture. I don't know, or the Thunder, like the 6 or 7 seed right now.
They're the 7 seed.
7 seed in the West. So, good for Doug, but this trade needs revisited in the sense that it's one of the worst trades in Bulls history.
I love, by the way, that Casey asked John about it today, and John's response was basically to point out that the coaching staff and Tom Thibodeau were really on board with trading up to draft Doug, too.
How much of that do we believe? I will say this.
I actually do believe that, but I just think it's funny that that's immediately what he goes to. Was, hey, he had to get his shot at Tom in there.
I do believe the infatuation with Doug McDermott had far more to do with the front office than it did Tom Thibodeau and his coaching staff.
Well, but to be fair, no, it seems like the kind of guy that Tom would want to go after. He's a 4-year college guy.
Tom wanted a shooter, too.
Yeah, they needed a shooter. He's a 4-year college guy, so you can say, oh, he's ready to play right now. And obviously, Tom has his history of not ever playing rookies any significant minutes, but you know, he seemed like at the time, because that was the first year you and I were covering the Bulls, right?
So around
that time, like there was, you know, the thought was, you know, Tom likes it because he can play right now, and the front office likes his potential, and like it seemed like a natural fit, and it seemed like that was something that generally all of them were on board with.
It was passing the buck a little bit.
It wasn't nearly the same thing as, you know, the many, many reports that have come out that Tibbs and the coaching staff were really pushing hard for Gorgui Dieng, who is a good NBA player, when the front office ended up drafting Tony Snell, who is not.
Well, the person that the Bulls probably most whiffed on in that 2014 draft, and why I think it is a real big miscalculation in hindsight, too, because we got to play out all the other factors here, the other draft picks, today's trade. But the Bulls had the 16 and 19 picks that year, could have taken a stab at two younger guys blossoming if they kept those. But Rodney Hood went in the 20s, and he's turned out to be an excellent player. And I know Rodney Hood was very much on the Bulls' radar then. That's a guy they evaluated very strongly.
And even the two guys that Denver ended up taking with the two picks that they got from the Bulls, Gary Harris, and I know Yusuf Nurkic is in Portland now, but he's an NBA rotation player.
At 11, they also could have taken Zach LaVine.
Yeah.
Because he went a pick or two later to the Wolves there. So they had a chance, whether it was trading that day or not trading that day, to get a playmaker in the backcourt. And either one of those guys, Hood or LaVine, would work very well alongside Jimmy Butler, I think. And there's a lot of factors, too. Maybe the Derrick Rose situation plays out differently with a different guy in there. Maybe not. Who knows? But, again, Clint Capella went later, too. A big man that was very helpful.
I was told, though, that you can't find impact players after the top 10 or in the middle of the lottery.
There's a lot of contradictions in Bulls land, Sean. So not everything. Like, that's an excellent point by you, and all I can say is it's a good logical point, and I have no sensible response because things don't make sense
right
with the Bulls so often. But yeah, they had to get rid of a couple second rounders too by the time they finished the Doug McDermott maneuvering to open up cap space for others in that free agency to get rid of Anthony Randolph's contract. And today, like, it's not even like they could do. They couldn't even just flip Doug McDermott today straight up for campaign, it didn't seem like.
No.
So the Thunder, while I think Doug's a more established player and better right now than campaign, campaign's ceiling, because he was a 2015 guy, is at least still viewed higher than Doug's, it appears, right, across the NBA. So yeah. The only way to even get Doug out of town was in a package deal. The only way to get him out of town and get an asset that you really wanted back was with him as part of a package with Taj Gibson, someone else who has meant so much to the organization. So just a long string of fallout from the Doug McDermott pick not working out. And I really think it set this six-year window we're looking at here back several years, not having a more reliable frontline player there, someone that could factor into the starting lineup when you give up that many assets. But we can't end this podcast without talking about Taj a little bit.
Absolutely.
He got traded probably about, I think he was informed, 140, 145-ish. He was seen, he probably figured out a few minutes before that, actually. Practice ended 130 or so. But he was seen hugging coaches and some teammates, leaving the Advocate Center out the back door. We were a little bummed that we didn't get to talk to Taj Gibson. And Taj being Taj, came back to the Advocate Center after, I don't know if he went home, went to grab a bite.
Well, he went on Waddle and Sylvie.
Yeah, he did go on Waddle and Sylvie and do an interview and then race back to the Advocate Center and talk for 16 minutes. And he admitted he was bummed, basically. He wanted to finish the year as a Bull. He admitted that while also saying he was very excited to join the Thunder, compared himself to the new kid in class in school on the bus, not knowing where to sit. But it was, he's meant so much to them, and totally true professional, classy guy, Sean. And I know we're going to miss him just because he was always so enlightening. He's a cool dude, you know?
Taj is, I mean, yeah, he's such a good guy. And this is wild to think about. He is the only holdover from the Vinny Del, not just from the 2011 team that made the conference finals, because now that Rose and Noah are gone, he's the only guy left from those teams. He's the only holdover from the Vinny Del Negro era. So he was there for the last Vinny year, the whole Tibbs era, and then whatever this is right now. So like he's been through all of it. And through the entire time, he's never complained about his role ever. He's played through injuries. He's been willing to come off the bench or start, play the four, play the five, play a lot of good defense. Every single thing. He's a great teammate. He's a great locker room guy. He never threw Tom Thibodeau under the bus back when, like, it seemed like that relationship was ended. He was always very respectful of Tibbs, and he was the biggest defender of Fred Hoiberg. Like, he's just the most, like, Thunder, if any Thunder fans are listening to this, you guys are going to absolutely love Taj.
He's a quintessential team player. I love, just to the side, I love that you just called it the whatever this is now era. Is what you just termed it. The whatever this is now era.
I think that's a good description of what the Bulls are right now.
It's actually excellent, and I kind of want to start using that on Twitter, maybe a Twitter hashtag or something. But did want to point out, too, the Taj comments. You said he was a defender of Tibbs and Fred. I mean, he spoke highly of Fred, did not say anything negative. There's a lot of things he could have said. He could have said, like, Fred, you know, had some rocky steps early, and he really didn't even hardly say that. Very complimentary of him. But I thought his comments referencing the old days and his favorite moments really, really shined to me and how much the Tibbs era meant to him. Because he was asked if, what was it, his dunk over Dwayne Wade in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2011, I think, Sean, if that was his favorite moment as a Bull. And he's like, no, it truly, honestly wasn't. And he said his favorite moments wasn't a moment so much as, like, the persona he took on of being a rock of the team, basically, counted on as a positive force during negative times, right? Like, Taj didn't pick out a moment. He called the moments his favorite moments as a Bull, the trust that his coach put in him to finish games and be a central figure late in games. Ahead of guys that are making twice as much money as
him. I love that so
much. A clear reference
direct
to Carlos Boozer.
Direct shade at Carlos Boozer.
But I found that fascinating. That, like, the thing that mattered to him was that Tibbs trusted and believed in him. That's what Taj will remember most. And I think that says something about how you should remember Taj.
Yeah, probably. It says a lot. And I mean, Taj is... he's gonna, and he said this. I mean, most people would be kind of pissed off after being traded. He said, someone asked him about it at his availability. They asked him if he would be open to maybe coming back to Chicago in free agency. Now, just to be clear, I think there's absolutely no chance of that happening because of, you know, the direction they're going. They want to get younger, et cetera, et cetera. But he said he would be open to coming back for the right price. But that wasn't just, no, I wouldn't. But he also then said after that, I would love to come back at some point in the future, either in a coaching role or some other role, and like still be in the organization. Like
Fourth string ambassador behind Scottie Pippen.
Tony Kukoc
and Horace Grant.
Yeah, let's do it.
Sign him up, like, what, 20? He'll play for, like, 5 more years, maybe?
He'll be 32 this summer, so yeah, I think 4 or 5 more years.
Sign him up for, like, 2024, new Bulls ambassador. Taj Gibson would be just terrific. Love to have Taj.
After he completes his 4-year contract with the Minnesota Timberwolves, reuniting with Tom Thibodeau.
Early 40s, but... yeah, Taj, should be pointing out a couple, I guess, news and notes. Taj said that he had trade interest from 8 teams. 8 teams contacted his agent over the course of the last 24 hours or so leading up to the trade deadline. He thought that bodes very well for his upcoming unrestricted free agency.
Oh, he's going to get paid.
This summer, he should get paid. He deserves
to. He should, yeah. Go get as much money as you can get, Taj.
Jimmy Butler texted him, go get those money bags.
No, he just said, get the bag. That's a DJ Khaled saying.
Well, he was referring to lots of money, though.
Oh, he should. He was on a pretty below market deal the last 4 years, making like $9 million a year. Taj, go get paid as much money as you can. He deserves it.
Jimmy had already left the practice facility when news came down of Taj Gibson's trade. So Jimmy texts Taj that he loved him. As well, Taj also got a congratulatory / positive text from Joakim Noah. I don't know what the rest of the conversation was. Knowing Joakim, he might have said, good luck at the next situation. You're going to find it that you love it in Oklahoma City compared to Chicago, playing under Billy Donovan, who Noah, of course, played under at Florida and winning 2 national championships. And Taj also called the Bulls smart for trading him and getting something for him.
Right, because he was talking about how they didn't get anything for Powell, they didn't get anything for Noah. But I also just am like, if you have to give up a second-round pick with Taj to get a rookie who point guard who can't, or not a rookie, second-year point guard who can't shoot, and then basically 2 minimum guys, like I don't know what that says.
I don't either. The second-round pick is
again, the second-round pick is outrageous.
That's it's not so much the fact that the Bulls don't have that, but the signal somehow that. Just the idea that they couldn't complete a negotiation giving the Thunder a quality piece for the rest of the year in a playoff push and an 11th overall draft pick from 2014 who has proved to have one skill in the NBA that still translates and that he can be a rotation player. The fact that they couldn't complete a deal with those two to get a point guard who can't shoot but still has potential. You know, who's coming off? Did we mention his injuries yet? I can't even remember.
Jones fracture. Yeah, I think we mentioned it at some point. It's not
just
great.
The fact that they couldn't do that, I think it's a little concerning for the negotiation process, which the Bulls, we fully expect, will be re-engaging in trade negotiations come June. We'll have plenty more Will Jimmy Butler be traded podcasts on the way.
By the way, just want to point this out. Jahlil Okafor was not traded. And, you know, it's almost like he never made sense for the Bulls and the Sixers were maybe leaking their name as a team that was interested for leverage. Like, I just want to point out that, you know, that seemed like that was never a real thing.
Yes, so good decision too by the Bulls to just draw a line and say, no, we're not giving up anything of value. Like
they would have done it for Mirage straight up, because they would have given Nico away.
So I think the Bulls made some good decisions today in choosing to hang on to Jimmy Butler in the current market and not overpaying for anything for Julio Okafor and others, but I also think they made one pretty bad trade that I'm confused by, and that the only thing that will redeem it is if Campaign becomes a solid starting point guard in the NBA, a darn good player. Otherwise, you might just be flipping rotation players with Campaign and Doug McDermott. I think Doug fits alongside Jimmy Butler more too, but maybe there is a big picture, a bigger plan for the Bulls that they're just not letting on yet. Maybe it does involve more of a rebuild come June. You know, we'll be updating you as much as we possibly can on Locked On Bulls, which you can follow on Twitter and Facebook, right where you'd expect Locked On Bulls. Follow Sean at Iken. Follow myself at Cody Westerlund. And email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. We'll be at the United Center Friday night when the Bulls kick off the second half of the season, even though it's more like the final third, when they host the Suns. We expect Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, Fred Hoiberg comments Friday. None of them talked on this trade day, only management and the departing Taj Gibson, who Oklahoma City sent a private plane for Taj and Doug, which I thought was a nice little treat there. And
the Pelicans did the same thing to pick up DeMarcus Cousins from Sacramento.
Yeah, but Sacramento didn't send a private plane for Buddy Hield. He had to fly commercial.
You think the Bulls sent a private jet to Oklahoma City to get
Cameron?
We'll
have to ask Joffrey Laverne on Friday night, how did you get to Chicago, commercial, private, or Uber? We'll ask him and see how that goes. But as always, the best thing you can do is please subscribe to our podcast.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review. Tell your friends to subscribe. And check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. I'm actually about to record an episode later with Fred Katz, who is the host of Locked On Thunder and the beat writer for the Norman Transcript. We're going to tack that on to the end of this episode. It's going to be a special extra long double episode. We're going to get some Thunder perspective on some, the players that the Bulls are getting back, which I will admit I haven't watched much, and Fred's watched them a lot, so we're going to get some perspective on that. But check out Locked On Thunder for more of his thoughts on the trade. Check out any other shows for reactions to any other trade deadline deals, or lighting of the NFL shows for draft stuff coming up. But check out the Locked On Podcast Network, and we will be back with you guys, me and Cody, after the Suns game on Friday. Thanks for listening. Okay, now here is my conversation with Fred Katz of the Norman Transcript and the host of the Locked On Thunder podcast about the players the Bulls are getting, and then how Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott are going to fit in Oklahoma City and some other stuff. It's a pretty fun conversation. It runs about 35 minutes, so go enjoy that. All right, here's a Locked On Bulls, Locked On Thunder mini episode. I'm Sean Iken of The Athletic, co-host of Locked On Bulls. With me, Fred Katz of the Norman Transcript and the host of Locked On Thunder. And the Bulls and Thunder made a trade today.
They did. They made a pretty big trade. Some like legitimate names in here.
It might be the biggest trade of that actual, I guess maybe the Nerlens Noel one, but like, it might be the biggest trade of the deadline day, not counting the ones from a few days ago with, like, DeMarcus Cousins, but, like, this was kind of a quiet deadline.
Yeah, it was at least a quiet deadline day, but I think that might have just mostly been because, like, all of these big trades, they happened,
right, like, before.
Ibaka happened before. Cousins happened before. Like,
and
the Cousins
Paul
trade,
George and Jimmy Butler didn't get traded.
No, they did not. But like the Cousins trade, like that could have happened on Thursday. The Kings could have tried to wait out in the market. They didn't. They decided not to. So those sorts of things when they happen on Sunday, it turns Thursday into a buzzkill sometimes. Right. But I think the overall deadline had like some pretty fun trades. Just as a basketball fan, had some pretty fun trades to look at.
Yeah, I mean, like the Nerlens Noel one is interesting. I'm really interested to see how he does in Dallas. PJ Tucker, I'm interested to see how he does in Toronto. What other ones even were there that are like noteworthy?
Tyler Ennis to the Lakers, man.
Oh, for Councilman Jam. That's right. Councilman Jam got traded to...
He does look like Councilman Jam.
Have we never talked about that before? That's been a thing of mine for like 2 years.
No, that's hilarious.
Councilman
totally
Jam,
like
Marcelo Huertas. The only NBA,
totally looks like him.
The only member of the Lakers to ever get a shout out on You're the Worst. Do you watch that show?
No, but I've heard it's good, though.
It's so good. You should watch it. But he gets a shout out in the most recent season, and it's phenomenal.
That's incredibly unexpected.
Yeah, it's good. Wait, former Parks and Rec star Roy Hibbert got traded to Denver after being in Milwaukee for like a week.
Yeah, he's getting flipped all over the place.
Yeah, so I'm going to be honest. I have not watched.
Well, Sean, let's rehash the trade for listeners who may not know it. So the Thunder are sending Cameron Payne, Joffrey Laverne, and Anthony Morrow over to the Bulls. The Bulls are sending Taj Gibson, Doug McDermott, and an unprotected 2018 second round pick to the Thunder.
Yeah. So first of all, would the Thunder have done this trade without the second round pick? Because I feel like the Thunder would have done this trade without the second round pick. And I think it's outrageous that the Bulls gave up the two best players in the trade and a second round pick.
I think the better question might be, would the Thunder have done this trade if the second round pick were protected?
Yeah, like, right. This is just like one of those things. Like, I don't want to just pile on Gar and Pax too much because, like, we do that all the time on Locked On Bulls, and obviously the fan base is kind of down on them. But this kind of trade just shows how much better somebody like Sam Presti is at that job than they are.
I was so surprised because at first it came out that the Thunder were getting a second round pick. I was like, oh, okay. I kind of figured they would be the ones sending over the second round pick.
That's what I thought too, and I was just like, when I saw the details come in, and then I confirmed it with people that I, you know, was talking to in the Bulls front office anyway, and that was just like, wait, they're giving a pick? Like, seriously? Like, what is that?
Right. And I was surprised when it came out as unprotected.
Right.
And like when it came out as officially as unprotected, I said, that's some weird stuff because that was not something I expected. I kind of thought it would be like 31-40 protected or something like that.
That's some nice work by Sam Presti there.
It is. That's a couple of really good trades he's made in the last year between the Ibaka trade and this one.
Yeah, he's done extremely well. So tell me a little bit about Campaign because I don't really know much about him. Except for he has cool hair and he was Russell Westbrook's dance partner. That's the extent of my – and he had the same foot injury as Kevin Durant. That's the extent of my Cameron Payne knowledge essentially.
Let's talk about Cameron Payne. Let's talk about Cameron Payne. You'll like covering him. He's a good kid. He's a good kid.
Okay.
You'll like covering him.
Well, that's good.
He's a pretty good interview. Now for the part that people who aren't actual beat writers care about.
Right.
he's struggled this year. Like, he's without question struggled this year. And part of that is on him, I think. And part of that is on the fact that he's really been – either injured or recovering from injury pretty much all of his professional career. And I think part of that is just on the position the Thunder put him in. Coming into this year, the Thunder really thought and he had the foot surgery over the summer because he had that the fracture in the fifth metatarsal in his right foot, the Jones fracture.
Which is the summer. The same one that Kevin Durant had a couple of years ago.
Right. He had the Jones fracture in his right foot. Over the summer, he had surgery on it, and he was back. He was in training camp. He had a different fracture in the same bone in the same foot during training camp, and he had to go out again. Going into training camp, like, the Thunder thought, I think, that he was going to be a 20-22-minute-a-game guy. I think they thought that he was going to play all the backup minutes behind Russell Westbrook, and then they'd be able to play 5, 8, 10 minutes a game next to each other. Once Payne came back, he's really struggled to shoot the ball. He hasn't necessarily struggled to create shots for himself, but I think he's struggled to shoot the ball. I think he's best when he's got a big center playing pick and roll basketball with him. Like, he's a pretty decent pick and roll point guard. His best minutes in the 20 games that he's played have come when Steven Adams has played with the bench unit, and they've just run pick and roll after pick and roll after pick and roll, and he's been good at that. And he's missed some shots, but he hasn't necessarily struggled to create those shots. They haven't really been contested. They've just missed. They've been inaccurate. And I think he's not a 33% shooter. Like, at some point, those shots are going to start to go in. He's going to get a little bit hotter. Now, I don't know if he's great, but he hasn't necessarily had the opportunity to play because he hasn't gotten those minutes next to Russell Westbrook. And I think part of it is that it's almost like the Thunder figured, all right, he's – because in Summer League, they played him next to Samaje Christen. And the reason why they said they were doing that in Summer League – was because they wanted to give him minutes playing next to a point guard so they could ready him for playing next to point guard at the real level. And I think one of the reasons they got away from it, because when they saw it, they thought, oh no, he can't guard twos. So I don't know if he's a guy who's going to be able to play next to point guards very often. But, like, the Bulls look like they're just going to hand the reins to him, right?
Well, I mean, what are their other options? Because, I mean, Michael Carter-Williams has been in and out of the rotation. Jaren Grant is starting right now, but, like, he hasn't been great. And then Rondo is completely in the doghouse at this point. And then, you know, what are you, kind of Isaiah Cannon even is a point? Like, they really have no other options but to give him every opportunity to earn the starting point guard spot.
Right. So, I mean, I think if they run pick-and-roll basketball, they put the ball in his hands, they play him over 20 minutes a game. They're
playing
not
with Robin Lopez.
Right, right. Robin Lopez is a great screener, too. Like, Robin Lopez isn't that different from Steven Adams. Like, Adams is a better athlete. I think Adams is, like, a better player. But in terms of his style, like, he's a great screener. He's tough. He's a bruiser. Like, he's a guy who will be good for Cameron Payne, I think. And I think he's the kind of guy who he can play good basketball with. So I think that's something that will help him a little bit. I think he's a better player than he showed with OKC. I don't know if that means he's a really good backup point guard, or, you know, he's a decent backup point guard, or maybe he's a fringe starter or whatever it is. But I don't think he's like a 33% shooter like we saw in Oklahoma City. I think there are a lot of other factors that have come into that, and, you know, from the inconsistent playing time to the injuries to just the fact that, like, they haven't necessarily put him in the best position to succeed. And I don't know if he was ever going to be in the best position to succeed as long as he was here. I just don't think the fit necessarily worked.
So you think this could be a good change of scenery for him, and that he could do well in Chicago, basically, what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, well is relative. Like, I think he will be better in Chicago than he's been in Oklahoma City.
Okay, and that's exactly how I feel about Doug McDermott going to Oklahoma City, just to make a transition here.
Why is that?
Because he's playing, first of all, with an actual point guard in Russell Westbrook, which he hasn't had in Chicago, either playing with post-injuries Derrick Rose or whatever hodgepodge of point guards the Bulls have been putting out. I also just think that his confidence has just been so shot over the last couple of years, because he's had all these opportunities to succeed and he hasn't been able to. I think he's just a total change of scenery guy. You know, he's not, I think he has the ability to be a useful NBA player, which he has not been the last, certainly not this season, but the last couple of years before this. He has one elite skill, which is shooting. He hasn't been shooting great this year, but he shot really well. He shot over 40% from three last year. So he has that ability. He's a big guy. He has hashtag sneaky athleticism. You know, he can get up a little bit. I think a new situation will be good for him, and I also think that I trust Billy Donovan more than I trusted Fred Hoiberg to really, you know, call up plays and put him in situations where he'll actually be able to succeed.
Right. That makes sense. And something that I also think will be interesting with how they use McDermott, see how often they put him next to Russell Westbrook in the starting, and not necessarily in the starting lineup, but just in the starting unit, because so Victor Oladipo, I think right now he still leads the NBA in percentage from the right corner among qualified shooters.
Okay.
And the reason for that is not because Victor Oladipo is all of a sudden unbelievable from the right corner. He's definitely good from the right corner, but it's because Russell Westbrook is really good at creating corner threes. And it's because defenses collapse in on him like crazy every time he hits the lane. And Doug McDermott is a really good corner three shooter. I think he's like a 41% three-point shooter from the corners in over the last 2 years. But, like, that's like you said, in an offense that's always had spacing issues and guys who have been glued to him, and a point guard never playing with a point guard who's great at creating corner threes. Like, now he's going to be playing with a point guard who's really good at creating corner threes. More than a third of his threes this year are coming from the corners. You're like, couldn't he be like a high 40% corner three shooter? Isn't that possible?
Absolutely possible. And in fact, that was what the Bulls kind of expected out of him. And they never had the personnel or the, you know, system really in place to actually take advantage of his skill set. I think he's going to do great in Oklahoma City. Now, speaking of three-point shooting, like, the thing that jumped out to me, you know, Joffrey LeVern is a guy, you know, I've watched him a little bit, you know, this year in Oklahoma City and then the last couple of years before that in Denver. He's shooting 34.6% from three this season, which is pretty respectable for a center after shooting, you know, in the 20s or teens the couple of years before that. Like, is that legit? Has he actually improved his three-point shot, or is that just kind of a low sample size thing?
The Thunder think he has. One of the reasons the Thunder traded for him was because they thought that he could shoot. You know, he was always – the way that he plays internationally, when he plays with the French national team, they play him as a stretch four, stretch five.
Okay.
Like, always. And I think the Thunder kind of watched that and thought – that's how he should play in the NBA. And that's really how he's played for the last, like, month. Like the last month or so, he spent even more time behind the three-point line than he was before. He's not a great three-point shooter, but he's like very capable. And he also, like last year in Denver, he shot a really bad percentage from three, but I think he also shot like over 50% from mid-range. So he's shown flashes, different spots on the floor, of being a really reliable shooter. Now, I don't think he's ever going to be like a great three-point shooter, but he's definitely a guy you have to guard. He's definitely a guy that you have to close out on. And if he's wide open, teams should feel really good, or the Bulls now should feel really good about him putting up a shot like that.
So basically he's what Mirotić was supposed to be in terms of being a stretch four or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's a little bit of a different type of player than Mirotić.
Well, but just that ability as a big man to be able to stretch the floor. If he can shoot a little bit more consistently. And by the way, you're right. I'm looking on Basketball Reference at the shot location data. He did shoot 50.8% from between 16 feet and 3-point line last season in Denver.
There you go. That's an incredible percentage.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's really, really good. So it's not like they thought he could shoot. They thought this was a thing. And Sam Presti talked about it a little bit at his press conference today when he talked about how, like, they got Joffrey Laverne for 2 second-round picks, and they thought that was good value. They thought that was really below where they thought he should be. And one of the reasons they traded him is because now they think the market around the league, like, the league has figured, like, oh, Joffrey Laverne's a useful NBA player who can help a team in somebody's rotation. And they think he's going to get more money than they initially anticipated because of, you know, how he's played that year at this year. And I assume that means people have realized, like, oh, Joffrey Laverne is a five who can shoot threes a little bit. I think the biggest difference between him and Mirotić is that I know the Thunder play him at the four, and I think that's partly because they have Steven Adams and they have Enes Kanter.
Right.
But I think in an ideal situation for him, and you're not going to build your team around Joffrey Laverne, but obviously. But I think in an ideal situation for him, he's probably playing his minutes at the five over at the four. Even though he's not a rim protector or you know, a really good pick and roll defender or anything like that. But I think when you put him on the perimeter, it really exposes his foot speed. And I think he's just a lot better when he can play the five as opposed to the four. Honestly, ironically, a really good matchup next to him in a bench lineup would be playing Taj Gibson at the four next to him.
Well, it's kind of funny because looking at this Bulls roster, I have to think that most of Laverne's minutes would be at the four as opposed to the five, because obviously the starting center is still going to be Robin Lopez, and then Chris Felicio is going to be the backup center. And then at power forward, that, you know, part of the reason that John Paxson said that they made the trade today was because they wanted to open up some of those power forward minutes for Bobby Portis. And so if Bobby's going to basically be the new starting power forward now, and then Nico is basically in the doghouse because they tried to trade him and they basically couldn't give him away at the deadline. I would imagine Laverne is probably ahead of him, of Nico, in the rotation at this point, because they want to see what they have, and they know what they have in Nico already, and they know that he's not good and that he's not going to be around. So I think he's probably going to play a lot of four.
Right, and you have to imagine they're going to play him because he's a free agent.
Right.
He's restricted this summer. So you have to, like, you're not renting a guy so you don't play him. So you have to imagine that they're going to play him.
No, absolutely, and that's something that Gar talked about today, which was that, you know, that part of why they traded for him is because he's a restricted free agent, because then, you know, then if they like him, then they can, like, decide whether they match on keeping him or not.
Yeah, no, that seems to make sense. You'll also like Joffrey. The interesting thing about the three guys is, like, actually, I feel like it's the same thing with the guys coming over the Bulls. Like, they're all, like the definition of, like, character guys.
I love Doug, and the thing I like about Doug is that, like, he'll... You know, this is not shade at him, but there's times when he doesn't know when he's not supposed to say something, which is great for a beat writer, because there will be times where like he'll basically come out and say, yeah, it's just a better vibe this year, like in training camp, basically saying without saying it that, like, Rose and Noah being gone, like, makes the vibe better, even though that's not something you're supposed to say. He'll basically say stuff like that because he doesn't realize that he's not supposed to say that. Like, it's great.
But you now have a duty, by the way. Now that Joffrey's no longer in Oklahoma City, you now have a duty to continue the nickname that Steven Adams calls him, which is the Big Croissant.
The Big Croissant. Okay, is that a new one? I'll try that out.
That's what Steven Adams calls him. And then there's, you know, the Zach Harper nickname, I assume.
Kilometers.
Kilometers Plumlee, because he looks exactly like Miles Plumlee.
Does Joffrey Laverne know about that?
He knows that everyone thinks he looks exactly like Miles. I've discussed it with him on multiple occasions. I don't remember if I've brought up Kilometers Plumlee to him, but he's got a really good sense of humor, so I feel like he might find that funny.
So I have an assignment for you now, too, which is I need you to find out what the barber situation is like in Oklahoma City as far as, like, player services.
Oh, I know it.
Because Doug always has the tightest fade before every single game. Like, it feels like he gets it fresh. But I kick myself now for never actually doing this story because he just stays having the freshest haircut before every single game.
You have no idea how up I am on the barber scene with this team. I've asked many players about where they get their haircut, and I've asked many players about how often they get their haircut because I thoroughly believe that like Joffrey Laverne gets his haircut all the time because he's always got the fade too, and he insists it's every 2 weeks, but I don't believe him.
There's a free story idea for you with the Doug thing. It's become kind of a running joke on Bulls Twitter and like among Bulls media, just like how often he looks like he just got his hair cut that day. Like that's a free story idea for you. Now, real quick, is there a reason Anthony Morrow is shooting 29% from three this year? Like is that a thing?
I have a theory.
What's your theory?
My theory. So Anthony Morrow, I mean, have you watched Anthony Morrow's shooting form this year?
No, I haven't.
So Anthony Morrow basically over the last year has reworked his shot.
Okay.
So that he doesn't dip you will watch Anthony Morrow's shot and you will say, "What in the world is that?" Because he doesn't dip the ball. You know how you catch the ball, you bring it to your shooting pocket, and then you shoot, right?
Sure.
He doesn't bring the ball to his shooting pocket at all. So he just wanted to create – it's the fastest release I've ever seen in my entire life. He just wanted to create the quickest release possible. So if someone throws him a pass on a catch and shoot and the ball is to the right of his head, he'll catch it to the right of his head and he'll just shoot it from there without bringing it down even a quarter of an inch. And it is amazing that he's able to do that. Last year he shot 37% and from three, which is a good percentage, but I believe it was the lowest percentage of his career. This year he's doing it pretty much every time he catches and shoots, and I feel like it's possible that the reason that it's gone down is just because while this is a great idea and you got to admire a guy who's a 40-some-odd% career three-point shooter for saying, you know what, I got to get better and I'm going to fix this even more so I can get better, you got to admire somebody for doing that, but maybe it's not working.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, pretty clearly just looking at the percentages, like he's in the high 30s or the 40s pretty much every year of his career, and then and then this year he's at 29, which is atrocious. But I mean that's kind of irrelevant now because they basically said today he's an expiring contract, like he's not going to be here next year, so it doesn't really matter that much. But I was just a little curious about that because that's his reputation, is like the one elite skill he has in the league is shooting, and that's something he just hasn't been doing this year.
Right. No, he hasn't. It's also possible that, and it, you know, obviously these sorts of things tend to be many, have many contributors, but it's also possible that he's been getting inconsistent playing time. He always talks about how he's a rhythm shooter. He'll play 7 minutes one night, zero the next, 14 the next, zero the next, you know, and when he's getting that inconsistent playing time, sometimes it's just hard to find a rhythm, hard to get on a hot streak. But yeah, obviously those numbers, it's not like he's like falling a 35%, like 29% is a drastic drop from where he is in the rest of his career.
Yeah, that's crazy. But again, like it doesn't really matter for the Bulls that's happening because he's gonna play 25 games in a Bulls uniform.
Right.
So
let's talk about Taj Gibson.
Yeah, let's talk about Taj Gibson. I enjoy
maybe the best
about
player, him. Best player in this deal.
Oh, without question, the best player in this deal. Like Taj is a guy that, you know, until the Raptors did the Serge Ibaka trade, which obviously took them off the table as an option, we had been talking here in Chicago about like the obvious trade being Taj to the Raptors for basically the same package that they gave to Orlando for Ibaka, which was a first round pick and Terrence Ross or somebody as salary filler. So like that's the kind of return that they kind of thought they'd be getting for Taj. And obviously once Toronto's out of the market, there's not really a lot of teams that are a combination of, you know, having a pick and, you know, needing to trade for Taj in order to contend. Like, the Oklahoma City is exactly the kind of team that should be trying to trade for a guy like Taj Gibson, because especially, you know, with Cantor coming back from that hand injury, he's, you know, they maybe want some more depth up front at power forward there, and Taj is a guy who's versatile. He can play both forward, he can play both front court positions, he can play the, you know, he comes, he'll start, he'll come off the bench, he'll play through injuries, he doesn't complain about anything, he's just, like, you're going to absolutely love Taj. He's a great guy. He's super positive. He's super optimistic. His teammates love him. And he's just a guy who's been through some stuff and gotten some really good perspective about stuff as far as, like, an NBA career. Like, he's just I'm going to miss Taj a lot. Like, I'm going to be honest with you about that.
The Thunder could put together – I mean, look, these lineups will not have spacing by any means. But the Thunder are going to be able to put together one of the best defensive front courts in the league with Robertson, Gibson, and Adams.
Yeah, it's very true, and, you know, I mean,
that's a really formidable defensive
it's,
lineup.
It's crazy, and that's going to make some really interesting matchups. If because I mean they're going to get the, they're at this point they're basically locked in. They're going to get the 7 seed in the West, so they're going to probably play San Antonio in the second round. Like, that's going to be an interesting, because San Antonio has kind of a big lineup too, you know, a big front court lineup too, with like Pau Gasol and David Lee and, you know, different guys they put in there. Like that's going to be interesting to see that matchup.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And you know, last year the Thunder killed San Antonio with lineups with Adams and Cantor too.
Yeah.
And they can really, in a playoff series, like, I mean, I think Sabonis is still going to get minutes. My educated guess, and I don't know what they're going to do about starting lineup, my educated guess is they're going to start Taj Gibson. And Sabonis is just going to take, like, Joffrey LaVerne's minutes, and maybe he'll get 12 minutes a game or something like that. But come a playoff series, you can play Adams 34 minutes, and, you know, especially if it's against the Spurs and you can play Cantor a lot. Like, you can play Adams, Gibson, and Cantor in all of your big man minutes, and you're fine, because, like, Gibson can certainly play next to Cantor and Adams.
Yeah, it's very possible, but, I mean, I'll just say this about Taj, and just in terms of, like, how much you're going to like covering him. He, you know, was told he got traded, like, 15 minutes before the deadline, so he was back in the office and then, like, left. And then he found out that the Thunder were sending a private jet to get him and Doug to take them to Oklahoma City. And so he comes back to the Advocate Center and talks to us for, like, 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's rare.
Yeah.
That's rare. That's not something you get often from a player.
No, it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. I've always heard good things about him. I wonder what his effect. So you know him personally. Tell me, what's he like with the young guys? Like, is he going to have? I've heard he's a great teammate, and I know everyone in Chicago loves him and all that. But is he going to be one of those guys like Steven Adams always talks about how, like, the effect that Kendrick Perkins had on him when he was, you know, a rookie and a second year guy. Like, is he going to have that effect on Domantas Sabonis? Is that the type of guy he is?
Well, yeah. I mean, you talk to some of these, like Bobby Portis always talks about, like, how much he's helped him, and, you know, Felicio, you know, some of the young bigs that the Bulls have, Mirage to a lesser extent, because they have kind of different skill sets. But yeah, Taj is absolutely the kind of guy that, you know, is friends with all the guys on the team. Everybody rallies around him. He takes it on himself to, like, give the young guys advice about stuff. Yeah, he's going to be terrific for that locker room, which it seems like it's already a pretty good locker room over there in Oklahoma City anyway, but, like, Taj is going to be great there.
Yeah, it's a very it's a very even-keel locker room is the way I would describe it. It's a decent amount of personalities. Like, there, obviously, Russell Westbrook is a big personality. Enes Kanter is a big personality. Steven Adams is a big personality. Andre Robertson is a big personality. But they're all, like, you know, positive big personalities. None of them are – they're all just, like, you know, gregarious, funny guys, you know? And for the most part, the rest of the guys are pretty even-keeled.
Taj is, like, the definition of even-keeled. Like, he doesn't – he's the kind of guy – he's always, like, whenever – you know, whenever the team is, like, in a losing streak, he'll say, you know, talk about how they're still fine, they're still putting in work, like, he still believes they can turn it around, and then he'll always, you know, go and praise whoever. The other thing about Taj is he is, like, the ultimate company man. He was defended Tibbs till the end, and he's also been the biggest defender of Fred Hoiberg the entire time that he's been here.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how he's going to adapt, because he's never played for another team.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. But the Thunder,
that's gotta be just like a weird adaptation, though. Like from forget about basketball. Like from a human level, like since he grew up in Southern California, he went to USC. He was drafted by Chicago. He's played for Chicago for 8 years.
He's from like, New York, all of a sudden, actually.
Oh, he's from New York. That's right. But he went to high school in Southern California, right?
Well, he's already boys with Russ because they played against each other in high.
That's right.
In college.
So from New York, I forgot he was from New York. He's from Brooklyn, right?
And the reason that I will never forget that he's from Brooklyn is because a couple of years ago, during Tom's last year here, Taj basically revealed to us after a game in like January that he had been playing through a torn thumb ligament for 2 months. And then what happened was he told Tom about it, and Tom said, "Where are you from?" And he said, "Brooklyn." And Tom was like, "Well, that's right. You're Brooklyn tough." And then he just played through it.
Yeah. So the Thunder have three New Yorkers now. I'm not the only New Yorker.
There you go.
The only New Yorker in Oklahoma City, because they got him. They got Billy Donovan's from Long Island. And they got Royal Ivy is from Queens. Knicks legend Billy Donovan. When the Thunder played the Knicks this year, I guess someone as a joke, I assume it was like Knicks PR or something. It was really funny. They put a photo of Billy from when he was on the Knicks on the door to the Thunder locker room, and it was like Billy in like these incredibly short 80s shorts. And Billy was like phenomenally embarrassed, and it was very funny.
That's fantastic. I'm hoping somebody tries that with Hoiberg at some point. I don't know how that would go over.
Fred Hoiberg was too good for that to be funny, though.
That's right. That's the thing. He was legitimately a useful NBA player for a number of years.
Right? Didn't he lead the league in 3-point percentage 1 year?
He did. He was a good. And in fact, like a running joke among like Bulls beat writers and like Bulls Twitter is that the best shooter on the Bulls right now is the coach.
Yeah. Exactly. No, he was. He could play. Like Billy Donovan played, like even Billy was the first one to joke about this. Obviously he was a great college player, but he got a cup of coffee with the Knicks and that was it. He played, you know, a half a season with the Knicks.
Right.
That was his whole career. And maybe there was some nepotism there because it was Rick Pitino and Rick Pitino loves him.
Right.
But you know, who knows? There's no nepotism in the NBA.
No, absolutely none. They're just like there's no reason that Brian Colangelo is the GM of the Sixers, except for that he was just the most qualified candidate. Shout out to that Nerlens Noel trade and basically trading him for 2 second round picks.
I like that trade for Dallas.
Yeah, no, I love it for Dallas. It's a good flyer to take on him. Like they didn't really give much up. I'm real interested to see now whether Andrew Bogut, because they're going to buy him out, like the Sixers are, if he signs with the Cavs or if he signs with the Warriors, because it's going to be one of those two.
Yeah, I will quote Jalen Rose, and I will say, you don't get in life what you deserve. You only get what you have the leverage to negotiate.
Yep.
And Philadelphia did not have the leverage.
No, they did not.
That was a classic, like, it's hard for me to knock Philly for that trade because, like, I mean, they didn't get what Nerlens Noel is worth from a quality perspective.
I also love that there was all this stuff about how, like, there were multiple teams bidding for Okafor and they couldn't give him away today.
Yeah,
exactly. I was told consistently over the last couple weeks the Bulls were not as seriously interested in him as was being reported in other places, so I'm not surprised nothing happened there.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think the Thunder were pursuing him. They already got their own Jahlil Okafor, a much better Jahlil Okafor in Enes Kanter. So I don't think they were going for that one. Andre Robertson's staying. So I let me say two quick things to my Thunder listeners. Number one, Andre Robertson is staying. I have something up on normantranscript.com about that.
So you mean the fact that he was hugging people according to one tweet, like that doesn't mean he's getting traded?
The hugs. So when he was hugging people, we kind of had we all noticed it. Like all the beat writers, we all noticed it, and we were kind of like, what is going on?" And we were all just kind of staring at Robertson. Like it was a little peculiar. Like he came out of the back office and he hugged one of the assistant coaches, then he hugged one of the strength coaches, then he like hugged one of the PR guys. And he kept walking, and he like dapped up two other people, and then he went into the back, the locker room and the weight room are in two different places. Apparently, he was just going to the weight room after practice. And he spoke to us with the media like 5 minutes after this. We actually didn't ask him about the hugging because honestly, I didn't realize the hugging became a thing because I didn't realize it got tweeted out at the time. And we probably should have asked about the hugging. But in retrospect, I'm kind of glad we didn't because it led to Andre's tweet after, which I'm really happy happened.
Oh, absolutely. Shout out to Ralph Wiggum.
That was – Robertson had a really good tweet about the hugs. Anyway, somebody tweeted out that Robertson was hugging people. Didn't even speculate that Robertson was hugging people, but the rest of the internet did speculate. And it didn't it caught fire because that's what happens on NBA trade.
Yeah.
NBA trade day.
Yeah.
That's just the way that the trade deadline goes. There's always drama.
That's right. I like the trade deadline, but I'm kind of glad I don't have to deal with, like, oh, well, Isaiah Thomas tweeted the eyes emoji. Does that mean the Celtics are about to trade for Paul George? Like, I'm kind of glad we get a little bit of a break from that.
I never touch that stuff. It's fun. I'll follow it. I will deal with the facts when I know the facts.
Derek Rose's either girlfriend or ex-girlfriend or some woman that he's been involved with followed the Timberwolves on Instagram today, and that trade ended up not happening. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, how about all the Celtics stuff that, like, one of them followed Melo and Jay Crowder changed something on his Instagram and Melo started following the Celtics or the Celtics started following Melo or whatever it was. And I was like, here's the thing. If you believe that that means that Melo is being traded to the Celtics, then you are saying that the Celtics social media manager knows about the trade before the league office.
And that the Celtics social media manager doesn't get strict orders. Because you know teams, like, know about this stuff and care about this stuff. The Celtics team, like, social media manager doesn't get strict orders from the front office to not do anything that could possibly acknowledge it until it actually happens. Like, there's no way that, like, that person is going to know that what's going on and be able to say anything about it publicly before, like, Woj.
Right. Like, wouldn't it be great if the Celtics, like, if the NBA teams actually worked where Celtics make a deal and Danny Ainge is really pumped. They finally got their big name player. They you know, got all these assets. They finally get their big name player. Quick, tell the social media manager and make sure he follows Melo on Twitter.
God, it's so stupid.
Like, that's not a thing. But it's the drama's hilarious and stupid and
the NBA is just the best league.
There's always drama. There's more drama in the NBA than there is in any other league. And I don't quite know why. I mean, it's personalities and
right. It's because we actually get to know these guys as people. Because, like, baseball, it's totally anonymous. And football, like, you know who, like, the top quarterbacks are, but, like, guys have helmets on. Like, you know what number guys are, but, like, you see, and people talk about this all the time. Like, you see NBA players are wearing sleeveless shirts and shorts, and you see what their tattoos are. Like, you see their faces. They don't have to wear hats or batting helmets. Like you actually get to know them more as people just from that. And they also just have better social media presence.
I think it has to do with the approach the league takes, too. In the way that, like, they allow personalities to stand out for the most part.
And they let people post videos of their stuff on the internet.
Yeah, that's true, too. They don't just let it, they encourage it.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So on that note, this is going to be a fun stretch run for the season. I can't wait for you to meet Taj because you're going to love him.
Yeah, I could say the same thing to you about Anthony Morrow, man.
Cool. Good to know. I'm excited about it. So remember, you can follow me on Twitter at Hyken. You can follow Fred on Twitter at Fred Katz. Read my work at The Athletic. Read Fred's work at Norman Transcript. And leave both Locked on Bulls and Locked on Thunder lots of 5-star reviews on iTunes or Stitcher, Audio Boom, wherever.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.